Chapter 46. The sea's surface rolled and marched in endless formation. There were no whitecaps, and the troughs curled like furrows in a plowed field. There was a strange silence about the sea. A light mist floated over the waves, muting any sound of moving water, barely hiding the stars dipping over the western horizon. San Francisco's lights glowed in a creamy cloud against the dark sky to the east. It was an hour before dawn when the Coast Guard cutter Huron, running at full speed, intercepted the gargantuan supertanker Pacific Trojan, 20 miles west of the Golden Gate. Two Coast Guard helicopters circled the big ship, accompanied by the latest addition to Marine Air, a Goshawk copter that carried Captain Garnett and his 30-man Marine recon team. A fast, armored Army patrol boat followed at the stern of the tanker. On board were Commander Miles Jacobs and his Navy SEAL team, prepared to shoot grappling hooks attached to ladders onto the vast deck of the tanker. Vice Admiral Amos Dover, who was in charge of the boarding operation, stood with binoculars pressed against his eyes. "She's a big one, as long as 5 football fields end to end, and then some." "An ultra, ultra-large crude carrier," observed the cutter's commander, Captain Buck Compton. 23 years in the Coast Guard, Compton had served around the world, commanding cutters in daring rescues in stormy seas, and stopping ships whose cargoes were illegal immigrants or drugs. "You'd never know that 80% of her mass is below her waterline. According to her specs, she can carry over 600,000 tons of oil. I wouldn't want to be within 10 miles if her cargo of oil explodes. Better here than in San Francisco Bay." "Her captain is making no attempt at skulking into the bay," Dover said quietly. "He's got every light from bow to stern turned on. It's almost as if he wants to announce his presence." He lowered his glasses. "Strange that he would advertise his presence so conspicuously." Still studying the tanker, Compton could clearly see the ship's cook empty a pail of garbage into the sea as gulls swooped down into the water rushing past the gigantic hull. "I don't like the looks of it," he said flatly. Dover turned to his radio man, who was standing nearby with a portable radio plugged into the bridge speaker. "Contact our helicopters and ask if they see any signs of hostile activity." The radio man complied and waited until a voice replied over the speaker. "Admiral Dover, Lieutenant Hooker in Chase 1, except for a crewman who appears to be checking pipe fittings in the ship's cook, the decks appear empty." "The wheelhouse?" Dover inquired. The message was relayed and the answer came back quickly. "The bridge wing is vacant. All I can make out through the bridge windshield is 2 officers on watch." "Pass on your observations to Captain Garnett and Commander Jacobs and tell them to stand by while I hail the tanker." "She carries a crew of 15 officers and 30 crewmen," said Compton, studying the computer data on the tanker. "British registry. That means all hell will break loose if we board a ship flying a foreign flag without proper permission." "That's Washington's problem. We're operating under strict orders to board her. Just so long as you and I are off the hook." "You do the honors, Buck." Compton took the transmitter from the radio man. "To the captain of Pacific Trojan, this is the captain of Coast Guard cutter Huron. Where are you bound?" The supertanker's captain, who was in the wheelhouse as his ship neared the United States coast, answered almost immediately. "This is Captain Don Walsh. We are bound for the offshore oil pumping facilities at Port San Pedro." "The answer I would expect," muttered Dover. "Tell him to heave to." Compton nodded. "Captain Walsh, this is Captain Compton. Please heave to for a boarding inspection." "Is this necessary?" asked Walsh. "It will cost the company time and money to stop, and it'll throw us off our schedule." "Please comply," answered Compton in an authoritative tone. "She's riding low in the water," commented Dover. Her tanks must be filled to the brim. There was no answer of compliance from Captain Walsh, but after a minute, Dover and Compton could see that the wake caused by the tanker's churning screws was falling off. She still held the bone of foam on her bow, but both men knew it would take nearly a mile to bring her huge mass to a complete stop. Order Commander Jacobs and Captain Garnett to board the ship with their assault teams. Compton looked at Dover. You don't wish to send over a boarding crew from the Huron? They're better equipped to deal with resistance than our boys, answered Dover. Compton gave the order and they watched as the pilot dipped the Marine helicopter around the stern of the supertanker, its blades beating above the superstructure until it was clear of the radar mast and funnel. Then it hovered for a minute while Garnett studied the deck for any indication of hostility. Satisfied that the huge upper deck was clear, he motioned for the pilot to descend to an open deck area forward of the superstructure. Below in the water, Jacob's patrol boat closed along the hull just aft of the stern. Grappling hooks were shot out of a pneumatic gun and gripped their hooks into the bulwarks. The SEALs quickly scaled the rope ladders and spread across the deck, moving toward the main superstructure, arms at the ready. Except for one startled crewman, there was no indication of other life. Several men under Jacob's command found bicycles used by the crew and mounted them to patrol the enormous deck and oil tank tunnels in search of explosives. Garnett split his men, sending one team down to the engine room and leading the other through the stern superstructure, rounding up the crew and making their way to the wheelhouse. As he stepped onto the bridge, Captain Walsh stormed up to him, indignation written across his face. "What is the meaning of this?" he demanded. "You people aren't Coast Guard." Garnett ignored him and spoke over his portable radio. "Admiral Dover, this is Team One. The crew quarters and wheelhouse are secure." "Commander Jacobs?" inquired Dover. "Report on Team Two." "We still have a lot of space to cover," replied Jacobs, "but no sign of explosives in the tank areas we've already covered." Dover turned to Compton. "I'm going over." A boat was lowered and carried Admiral Dover over to the tanker where Garnett's men had dropped the pilot's boarding ladder. He climbed to the deck and ascended five sets of stairs to the bridge where he found an angry Walsh. The captain of the Pacific Trojan seemed surprised at finding a Coast Guard admiral boarding his ship. "I demand to know what in Hades is going on," Walsh snapped at Dover. "This ship has been reported to be carrying explosives," said Dover. "We are making a routine inspection to verify." "Explosives?" burst Walsh. "Are you crazy? This is an oil tanker. No one in his right mind would bring explosives on board." "That's what we intend to find out," Dover replied calmly. "Your report is ridiculous. Where did it come from?"
"From a high-level official at Cerberus Oil."
"What has Cerberus Oil got to do with anything? Pacific Trojan belongs to the Berwick Shipping Company of Great Britain. We transport oil and chemical products around the world for any number of foreign clients."
"Whose oil are you carrying?" asked Dover.
"This voyage, it belongs to Zandak Oil of Indonesia."
"How long has Berwick been transporting oil for Zandak?"
"More than 20 years.
"Team One reporting," came Garnett's voice over Dover's radio. "This is Admiral Dover. I'm listening. We can find no sign of explosive devices in the engine room or stern superstructure."
"Okay," said Dover. "Give Commander Jacobs a hand. He has far more territory to cover."
An hour passed while Captain Walsh fumed and paced the bridge like a man in the depths of frustration, knowing that each passing minute the ship was delayed cost his company many thousands of dollars. Captain Compton came over from the Huron and ascended to the tanker's bridge.
"I'm afflicted with impatience," he said, smiling. "I hope you don't mind my dropping in to see how it's going." Not well, said Dover in exasperation. So far, there is no sign of explosives or detonation devices. The captain and crew are not acting like men on a suicide mission. I'm beginning to fear we've been conned.
20 minutes later, Jacobs reported in.
She's clean, Admiral. We found no trace of explosive material.
There, roared Walsh. I told you so. You people are crazy.
Dover made no attempt to soothe the irate captain of the tanker. He was beginning to harbor large doubts about Sally Morse's truthfulness. But he was also vastly relieved to find that the ship had no intention of blowing up half of San Francisco.
Sorry for the intrusion and the delay, he told Walsh. We'll be on our way.
You can bet there will be a protest launched by my government against yours, said Walsh angrily. You had no legal cause to stop and board my vessel.
My apologies for any inconvenience, Dover said with honest regret. He turned to Compton as they exited the bridge and spoke in a low tone. I'd hate to see the looks on everyone's faces in Washington when I notify them that they've been hoaxed.